DSW's semi-annual sale is back. Take 40% off all clearance shoes in stores for a limited time. Literally every single clearance item at your DSW store is on sale right now. Sneakers, sandals, any style. If they're on the clearance racks, they're 40% off. So what are you waiting for? Don't sleep on these savings. Get to DSW ASAP. It's all or nothing, people. Shop the DSW semi-annual sale today.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Back on the Jeff Calkins Show, let's do this Chris Herney deal. Chris Herney joins me now. Chris, what are we listening to?
That's R-O-C-K in the USA by the musician who I believe at the time was calling himself John Cougar Mellencamp. Little celebratory Indiana music for a celebratory Indiana victory.
That was something else. Holy smokes.
Just another Pacers game, man.
Just another. Okay. At halftime, what were you thinking, Chris?
I was thinking that the Pacers were fortunate to not be behind by more. It was a weird first half because they turned the ball over, I think, 19 times in the first half.
Yes, 19 times.
But it was a weird thing where it wasn't, for the most part, like, it wasn't the kind of turnovers that create the avalanche. It wasn't the pick off the pass in the backcourt, pick off the dribble in the backcourt, and take it in for the layup. Like, at the end of the game, the Thunder only scored 11 points total off turnovers in the game, which is wild.
Yeah, why, by the way? That is obviously the key stat of that, and the three-point shooting are the two key stats of the game.
Yeah.
Why? Is it the Pacers got back, or they because they were a different kind of – why do you think they only scored 11 points after 24 turnovers?
Well, and I have to go back and watch. I've only gone back and watched the last 10 minutes. Right. I didn't go back and watch the last 10 minutes of the game, but there are rest that I go back and watch. But my sense is, in the moment, there were a lot of turnovers that were not all turnovers are created equal. Like, you can divide them into live ball and dead ball, right? So some of them were dead ball turnovers. And so you turn the ball over, but the other team, like, has to take it, you know, pass it in front, has to inbound it, and your defense is set up. So they did – the turnovers, by and large, weren't the live ball. You give up an open layup going the other way.
Yep.
So you can still score off the turnover, but in other ways, but the Thunder generally weren't. I thought the Pacers played a good defensive game from top to bottom. The turnover stuff was a huge problem in the first half, but it wasn't the most damaging style of turnover. They weathered that. And then in the second half, they handled the defensive pressure better. They only turned over only had five turnovers in the second half. And in the second half, it was that we sort of talked about this yesterday, like what needs to happen for the Pacers. And it was like, limit your turnovers and hit threes. And they did both those things in the second half. And in the fourth quarter in particular, they hit 6 of 10 from three. And they had that stretch in the middle of the fourth where it's just like Obi Toppin and Miles Turner, like, right, just taking turns, 3-3-3-3. Like, let's bank in a couple while we're at it for good measure. And so, like, a lot of stuff went right for the Pacers to win by 1 point in a game where the only lead they had was the 0.3 seconds in the end of the game. But it's not like everything went right. Again, they ended up with 25 turnovers or whatever total in the game.
And a lot of the things that went right were things that we thought, if they were, these things could go right. Like, the fact that they have shooters up and down their lineup, that Miles Turner can shoot and Obi, you know, and Nembhard can shoot and Nesmith can shoot. Like, those things, we were like, okay, if they're going to win, Like, that's not really that aberrational. I don't actually expect them to shoot 47% from three every game, but they have a lineup to do the kinds of things they did last night, I guess. Does that make sense? Yeah.
No, definitely. No, this was the path. Again, we talked about it yesterday. The path for the Thunder, for the Pacers, was to limit her be able to continue playing fast without turning the ball over, which they do all season, but can you do it against Oklahoma City? The answer was no in the first half and yes in the second half. Can you continue to play your style without turning the ball over against this defense? And then do you shoot well from three? And they did those things. They did those things while playing a good defensive game, too. And I think the Thunder kind of helped them out there. Like, they just had some guys who could play better and didn't. I thought it was kind of delicious that maybe the basketball gods do exist, and they exist to punish hubris from time to time. I thought it was kind of delicious that the Thunder, who have won 68 games and just marched through the playoffs, and they're at home, and they're like a 10-point favorite, and they just decide, like, we're going to change our starting lineup that's been great all season, and we know what the adjustment's going to be. We're going to go ahead and do it, and we're going to jump all over you from the beginning, and we're going to throw the knockout punch in round one. And then they do all that, and then they lose the game, and now it's like, now what, you know? And so, maybe now what could be they win four in a row, who knows? But to me, for them to change their starting lineup from the jump was a little much. Like, just roll your team out there that's been awesome and then adjust to what happens in the game, you know?
So there has been a fair amount of tension on that, and the fact that you're surrendering. You are the juggernaut. Why are you? You're betraying weakness by doing. Here's the truth, though. Like, it produced 19 turnovers in the first half, right? Like,
I'm not saying they're wrong. I'm not saying that Dagnall was wrong about that is where the series will be headed. I just thought it seemed a little cute,
right?
You know, to do that given who the Thunder are. To me, it's not necessarily that they were wrong strategically. I just feel like the basketball gods invited them for being a little too cute doing it from the jump.
Well, and it's possible that, like Holmgren did not have a good game at all. Now, it's also, you know, they're young, so we'll see. But throwing things off may throw, you know, you're throwing rotations off. It could be part of the reason that he had the game that he had. And by the way, the Pacers... Yes, they gave up those 24 turnovers, but they did pound them on the boards, which is something they typically do not do. 57-39, the Pacers won the rebounding battle.
Yeah, and neither of these teams, I actually don't know what the numbers are in the season. From a glance, they wouldn't seem to be either of these teams are great rebounding teams necessarily. But yeah, I mean, that is something that happens when you go small, right?
Right.
You think you're going to make up for it in other areas, which they partly did. They certainly did with their turnover creation in the first half. But like I said from the jump, they didn't get the kind of reward off those turnovers that they tend to. And now the Pacers got a half of the Thunder throwing the small ball defensive pressure, all of it at them. And it seemed like maybe they like, okay, let's take a breath. We're kind of used to this now. Maybe we can play with it. And I don't know. I mean, that defense is still going to be awesome, and it may rattle the Pacers again in the series. But they've sort of taken the biggest blow of it. And now it's like, you know, you've caught your breath and you feel like you can not drown a little bit.
Yeah, that's a point I've wondered about. You've survived a 19 turnover first half, and in the second half you score 66 points with only 5 turnovers. If you're trying to imagine how the Pacers might now win, and not just steal game one but actually win, it's partly based on this idea that much like Ja Morant, they figured some things out. And I, you know, he got a lot of grief for saying that, but it does feel like, yes, could they have already have adjusted to this ferocity? You would still pick the Thunder to win the series, would you not?
Yeah, but I think a lot more narrowly now.
Yes.
Yes, but much more narrowly now.
And not just because they've got game one, but because we have proof of concept.
That's right. That's right. No, you can see how they won by a single shot, but, and you know, there's a lot there to go either way. Like, no outcome is going to shock me at this point. I think before the series, like I would have been very surprised. Like, if the Pacers won, and certainly surprised if the Pacers won without it going to like 7 games or whatever, but we're now outside the realm of surprise with the series. So pretty much anything could happen, which is good. You know?
Oh, it's totally what we needed. This was absolutely transformative for the series now. Now, it is also pretty much identical to what happened in Game 1 against Denver, where Denver came back from 14 points in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
Aaron Gordon hits a shot to win. And here...
Yeah. That series won seven games.
Yeah.
So let's do it.
Let's do it. Obviously, Tyrese Halliburton has that ridiculous. I mean, this is preposterous. What he's now been doing is preposterous. He was fairly inert through the entire game. Your thoughts on what they did? What, like, does he have to be more? Like, I guess that they very clearly can win when he scores 14 points, but your thoughts on.
They are not. Tyrese Halliburton only averaged, I think, 18 points a game in the regular season. I did a thing, I can't remember, maybe it was one of the mailbags I did recently, where I was looking at some of the lead guards on these various teams. I was stacking Ja Morant up against them. And,
Right. Yeah. You
know, when you factor in, like, you know, you do it per minute, you even it out. It's like the guy at the bottom of the scoring list in that group was Tyrese Halliburton, you know, with Shea at the top. And so Tyrese Halliburton made all NBA, and he wasn't a dominant scorer. I mean, we think of him making these big shots and sets and big scoring games in the playoffs, but that's not how they played all season. It's not like we need Halliburton to score 30 and we need him to take 25 right. shots. That's not how they play.
Well, and it's interesting because if you've often said that with Ja, the best version of Ja is, you know, maybe it's slightly different. Maybe the balance is slightly more towards scoring than for Halliburton is. But
Ja's a real blend of these two guys, and like he's not as good as either right now. He could right. prove otherwise. Like go do it. I welcome it. But he is a blend. He is in some ways he's a little of the best of both worlds in that he has got that downhill off the dribble attack the paint scoring ability that SGA does, with the pure point guard playmaking ability that Halliburton does. Like, if you flip it the other way, he's much better than either of them at the other thing, right? He's a much better playmaker than SGA. He's a much better downhill scorer than Halliburton. He really blends those skills, and that's why Ja, to me, is such a talented player, and that's why his ability is so high, is that it's both. Like, that he does have the pure point guard ability and vision in that, you know, old-school, like, you know, go get a bucket kind of skill. And so, like, you know, Ja needs to be healthy and all kinds of other things, but that is sort of why Ja's ceiling is so high.
Among the various, you wrote a piece this week, I guess earlier this week, I lose track of time, lessons that you were drawing from this, the playoffs so far and this matchup in the finals. I don't know, do the Pacers emphasize the importance, and this is, it's not some novel concept, of shooters all over the court? You know, the Grizzlies just don't have that. You know, they don't. They've got their shooters, and they have a bunch of non-shooters. Is that part of the secret to the Pacers?
Well, I mean, it's a good thing to have if you can get it, sure.
Right.
I mean, it's kind of the ideal basketball would be players who are good on both ends of the floor at every position, every minute, right?
Right.
So, yeah,
right.
If you can do that, you can do that, do that. That is sort of the story with that Celtics team that won last year. And to some degree, that's the story with both of these teams. Now the Thunder don't have – it's a work in progress in terms of creating shots other than SGA, and he mostly yep. creates for himself, right? But they do have – everyone is an offensive threat to one degree or another, right? I mean, Hardenstein's not a shooter, but he is a little flip shot, right?
Yep.
There's no one you just ignore on that team. But the Pacers, I mean, the Pacers, I think the Thunder of the season have a higher offensive rating than the Pacers, but a lot of that is because their defense creates offense. If you're just looking at it pure, like, offensive skill and trying to separate out the defensive impact on the offense, I do think the Pacers are a little bit more balanced in terms of scoring and shooting and shot creation across their lineups. And, yeah, that's, I mean, they're more of an offensive-oriented version of that. And so – there's no one recipe,
no.
But I think as you get deeper and deeper to the playoffs, players who don't help on one end or the other are harder to play, right? So if you have defensive weak links or offensive weak links, those are the guys who like end up, they're just not there anymore by the time you get to this point. So yeah, that's something for the Grizzlies to look at in terms of like,
I guess that's
players
the point.
Who are weak link on one end or the other.
Is that it's? I guess that you're. That's that. It feels like the Grizzlies have a disproportionately for a good team, they have a disproportionately high number of players who are one-way players. I mean, obviously, Jaren's not. Like, Jaren's great, right? Jaren's tremendous at both ends. Where would you put Dez? Dez is a decent defender?
Yeah, yeah, he's a decent defender. I wouldn't classify him as a weak link, but he's not really a plus either. He's more of a neutral defender. You know, I mean, Edie is the kind of thing that's interesting because his game is not like anyone else. Like, he's got big strengths and big weaknesses on both ends of the floor.
Right. So it's not like he's an offensive
It's not like he's an offensive player or a defensive player. It's that he's really good and really bad on both ends of the floor in different ways. And there's a real interesting challenge for how you maximize the strengths and minimize the weaknesses on each end of the floor. You know, this is why, like, wanting to see Ja, like, become a better shooter and defender has always been an important thing. It's one of the reasons I think Kennard is not going to be back.
And Santi, you know, obviously, is a productive offensive player and a weak link defensively. And on and on we go. Didn't seem to matter that neither of these teams were from a massive metropolitan area last night.
This is only a thing that, like, some people like to talk about on TV or the internet. It's not. I don't think. Like, it really is. Like,
it's crazy.
I don't think like average people are like, you know. I'm not really interested in watching that tonight because it's Indiana and it's not New York. I don't think, like, you know, your random casual basketball fan really thinks that way. And so I don't know. It's either, I mean, you're asking the question, I'm going to answer it, but it's really either a thing like people talk about in a stupid way or it's a thing you talk about in an ironic way, but you're still giving air to it. So like, who cares? Yes.
Adam Silver spoke and a couple things. I just thought he was disingenuous. He said, he said we're not going to abandon the 82 game schedule, which we knew. And he said, sure, some of it's money. He said, but you tell me. He said, I just don't believe the injury stuff. The data suggests, and this is what he said. He said, if the data suggested the 82 games produce more injuries, you would expect more injuries in April than in October. And you'd expect more injuries in the playoff than early in the season, and that's not what our data suggests. And I guess I would simply say, no. It's not that it needs to be disproportionately more percentage-wise as the season goes on. More games means more wear and more injuries, period. Like, I just think he's being disingenuous. But it's not a surprise to you, is it, that they're not cutting back on 82 games?
No, but I mean, to me, the injury thing is not the only, like, reason to think about cutting back on games, right? I think, you know, fewer games, you know, where's the balance, right? The fewer games, the more the individual games mean, right? That's like the NFL thing.
Right.
Like, I don't think the NBA should have, like, a 20-game season. There's value to the how teams evolve, right? There's value to just having something to talk about every day and have it be part of your life. But, like, 82 is kind of a lot. You know, like, baseball is to me wild. Like, if you were starting baseball from scratch today and you didn't have any history to it, like, how many games you're playing? You're not playing 162. I just think, you know, you're playing 120 maybe. Like, I don't know. I mean,
how many NBA games off the top of your head? What do you want? 70? 68?
Somewhere in the high 60s, like 68 to 72, something like that. Just to get a little bit more air in the schedule. You know, get rid of more back-to-backs. Back-to-backs aren't just, like, rough for players. They can sometimes be rough for fans a little bit, too, right? Like, and so I think the schedule's a little bit too long. And I think the only reason not to tighten it up a little bit is money. It doesn't have to be an injury thing that necessitates that. I just think it would probably help to tighten it up a little bit. But it's not, like, the most important thing in the world to me, either.
He also talked about expansion. He said that at the meetings, they will take the temperature of the room in terms of expansion. He said, though, if you believe in your product, why would you expand? Because it's just going to dilute the product that you have. Honestly, it would dilute the money shares, but it would create more money. You're going to get whatever, $6 billion a year.
This is something that Mark Cuban has brought up. It's like, you know, you get the big expansion fees up front that the 30 owners can share among themselves, which is a lot of money. And so, but then over time, you're diluting the shares. And so it's sort of like a front-end money, back-end money. It's sort of like, you know, if you're Michael Heisman, do you want the naming rights in one chunk or do you want it spread out? It's kind of that kind of thing. So in the past, you know, Mark Cuban argued against expansion because he thought the better financial bet was against expansion, not pro-expansion. I don't know. I tend to think that there's enough talent out there that it's not going to actually dilute that much. the population has grown, the basketball has become more international, so you have more of that coming in. I think your player pool basis has grown so much relative to 20, 30 years ago.
Interesting. Yeah.
But I think having another couple teams is fine. And obviously Seattle just like needs a team. You sort of ripped a team out of Seattle and they've been wanting a team for decades. And like, if you're not going to expand, how you get the team there, that opens up other problems. Right. And so
I think there are those who would say that in a perfect world, those of course outside of the city of Memphis, who would say, listen, all we should do is we should take Memphis and New Orleans and move them to Seattle and to Las Vegas. And that would, I bet there's a substantial, chunk of NBA owners who would be happy to do that.
There's been the utility of having Seattle out there as a leverage for communities to build arenas, right?
That's true. Yes. Yeah, Seattle will be out there and you'll get people are building arenas. All right, Chris, I appreciate it. We'll talk to you again on Monday. Thanks so much. Have a great weekend.
Thanks.
Chris Harrington from the Daily Memphian. Jeffrey, what's your prediction now? Who's going to win and how many games?
This season, let your shoes do the talking. Designer Shoe Warehouse is packed with fresh styles that speak to your whole vibe without saying a word. From cool sneakers that look good with everything to easy sandals you'll want to wear on repeat, DSW has you covered. Find a shoe for every you from the brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, New Balance, and more. Head to your DSW store or visit DSW.com today.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses like Rise Bakery connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
I kind of think Thunder and seven. I've talked myself into this will be like the Denver series. Because, like, to Chris's point, look at the checklist of things that had to happen for Indiana to win. And that's pretty extensive. For most of the game, the better team is still the Thunder.
They had to shoot 47% from three.
Right.
Let's just start there.
And maybe they can do that twice again.
And they won the rebounding battle 57-39. And Chet Holmgren went 2 of 9. And yes, I do still believe the Thunder will win.
Do I also think SGA is going to go 14 of 30 for six more games?
Right. But I also do believe that Tyrese Halliburton will be fundamentally quieted by this.
I don't think that was a coincidence either.
I don't think it was coincidence.
How physical they were on the perimeter. Yes.
But, really.
And the Thunder all year have been one of the toughest teams to drive against that we've ever seen.
I was walking into my house the other day. I had a friend over. No, it was the other way around. I was at my house. Friend comes in. Oh, it was Lexi Johnston. And she immediately looks at me and says, "That's beautiful." And of course, it was because I was wearing a Johnny something from O'Call. That's what happens. And so it's just such a nice thing that this happens to me now. People will see something I'm wearing and say, "That looks great." You know, it was the other day. I was at Collierville Rotary, and the woman next to me saw my sport coat and she said, "That's a beautiful sport coat. Is it from O'Call?" I said, "Yes, absolutely. It is from O'Call." And so I'm just telling you, Father's Day is coming up. So if you just like, you don't have to be particularly creative. You don't have to. All you have to do is go to O'Call and you will delight him. You will absolutely delight your father with what you get from O'Call. And that's true if it's a gift card. But the clothes are absolutely stunning. The people are incredibly helpful. I've gone in there before, and I've said, they have a women's department there too. And I've just said, "Help me." And that's what they do. They help you. They've been doing it for more than a century. And so, this Father's Day or the summer, any day, make sure, take care of your dads, get yourself to O'Call. We've got a special edition for Fish on Friday, on Tuesday, actually on Friday. We had a massive food fight between the President of the United States and the world's richest man yesterday. It was crazy. Things I think have calmed down today, but we will get an update on this and an analysis of this from our man in Washington, D.C. By special request. A Fish on Friday, on Tuesday, actually on Friday. We'll do that next. It is the Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.
DSW's semi-annual sale is back. Take 40% off all clearance shoes in stores for a limited time. Literally every single clearance item at your DSW store is on sale right now. Sneakers, sandals, any style. If they're on the clearance racks, they're 40% off. So what are you waiting for? Don't sleep on these savings. Get to DSW ASAP. It's all or nothing, people. Shop the DSW semi-annual sale today.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show. So I was on with Gabe yesterday, as I am on Thursdays. And Gabe, we were talking about this Musk-Trump thing. And Gabe said, it's too bad that we don't have Fish on Friday. Of course, our man in Washington, D.C., Charles Fishman, used to be on Fridays. We moved him to Tuesdays. That's how it became Fish on Friday on Tuesday. But by special request, and it was Gabe who thought of it. He sent out the fish signal, I like to call it. We have Fish on Friday on Tuesday, actually on Friday. We thank you for your service, Charles.
I you know what? The thanks is always in the Twitter applause and the paycheck. The paycheck comes reliably every month, and the numbers never change.
No, zero. A lot of zeros in that paycheck.
Exactly as much as Elon Musk was paid for his Doge service. So the richest man in the world, in the history of the world, and Charles Fishman, same pay level. That's good. Same federal grade, same federal pay grade. Anyway, we're
where do you want to start?
There is breaking news.
Oh yeah, what's happening?
There is breaking news. The White House has announced the red Tesla that Donald Trump and Elon Musk so famously got in the driveway of the
White House. He sold them to him on the White House lawn. Yeah,
he sold it to him. Right.
Yeah.
There was a brief confusion at this event about whether it was a gift or he was paying for it. And Trump said, "Oh, I'm going to pay for it. He needs me. He needs that sale." And as it turned out, of course, he did. The White House has announced this morning, if you wonder how the feud is going, the White House has announced this morning that Donald Trump will be selling the Tesla.
Oh, my God.
This is just so petty.
This whole thing is just crazy. Yeah. Oh, go ahead. What's the question?
The question is, has Donald Trump ever ridden in the Tesla, even on the White House grounds?
No. No.
Let alone off the White House grounds, my bet would be no. Exactly right. So that's kind of it's kind of like being given a beautiful.
Let me ask you this. He was given a jet. He bought the Tesla. Whatever. He's keeping the jet. He's selling the Tesla. Whatever. Here's my question. This was highly amusing yesterday, and there's all kinds of jokes flying around. Pick your favorite. Did you have a particular favorite, Charles? Did you like the just breaking news? Vladimir Putin has offered to negotiate a truce between Musk and Trump. Do you like that one? Did you like this is like watching the Patriots and Cowboys play with both teams losing by four touchdowns?
I like that. With both.
Jeffrey, did you have a favorite joke on this topic?
Both would lose by four touchdowns. The tweet I liked the best was from a guy named David Rothkopf. This is going to alienate everybody. It said, "Don't let your glee interfere with your loathing."
What I was going to ask was, yes, this was, we'll let Jeffrey ponder that. He already told us his favorite tweet. It was the John Rothstein tweet. Yeah. So,
what was his favorite tweet?
It was different.
It's very niche.
It's very niche. It's very sports, internal sports world. It was, go ahead, Jeffrey. Give us the essence of it. Go ahead.
It was essentially, Musk, Trump, you're a pedophile. Trump, Musk, your butt hurt. John Rothstein, we've got a UT Chattanooga, Iona.
In other words, in the face of all of this happening, he was focused on some
like a
minor
home and home.
College basketball moment, whatever. Here, but my question is this, is that it was, you know, all the late night hosts had a great time. Everyone on Twitter had a great time cracking jokes. Are there serious repercussions here, and is it really not as funny as it appears?
Well, let's agree it can be both funny and serious, right?
Right.
Elon Musk spent alone personally $250 million to elect Donald Trump. There's some dispute, but you could argue that if Elon Musk hadn't stepped in. And Elon Musk has a following of people. All you have to do is look at his Twitter feed and the responses to his tweets. He has a following exactly the way Donald Trump has a following. There are people who are devoted to him and to Tesla and to the Mars mission in the same, I would say, you know, as fans, somewhat right. Uncritical, no matter what. Elon Musk's a genius. Let's go with him. There was an interesting moment in the congressional response. Now I got to look it up. I'm sorry. Hold on, everybody. Last night, a member of Congress said he's going to go with the guy who knows how to do the math on the big beautiful bill. and I don't know who that was. Sorry. He said one of the members of Congress queried last night, said, I'm going to go with the guy who knows how to land rockets backwards, you know.
Okay, but was that a Republican or a Democrat?
That was a Republican. No one was asking Democrats anything. I think that's an indication of there's a lot of damage to be done all around. Okay, if you take a step back, Elon Musk spent $250 million of his own money to get Donald Trump elected. They campaigned together for weeks. Musk famously moved to Pennsylvania. He offered people $1 million just to vote, right? There was absolute Trump craziness. People talk about Trump derangement syndrome. He had it in the positive sense. There's some argument about whether Trump would have won if not for Musk stepping in. Many people think Musk was instrumental. All battleground states, the margin was very, very close. Right now, Donald Trump has two priorities. Literally, his whole effort, his whole political effort is focused on passing the budget and tax bill, what they call the one big beautiful bill, zero OBBB. And that includes immigration reform as well. And the second priority is tariffs. And Elon Musk has come out very bluntly opposed to both. This started last week, even before the somewhat weird ceremony where the most powerful person in the world gave the richest person in the history of the world the key to the White House in a little wooden box. I mean, it's like I made you the president of the United States and you gave me a keychain. I gave you a red Tesla. You gave me a key that opens nothing. Little do we know that on Musk's laptop are the keys to every secret federal government database. He doesn't need the key to the White House. He had come out against the tariffs, not noisily, but very clearly, very unequivocally. The tariffs will hurt us. He had started to oppose the reconciliation bill. That one big beautiful bill passed by one vote in the House. It required weeks of literally, if I give you this, will you vote? If I take out that, will you vote? By Speaker Mike Johnson. Now it's in the Senate. Before this whole blow up, the Senate was going to do some things. They weren't happy with it. Some people are unhappy that the bill cuts people off Medicaid, the healthcare program for low-income people. Some people are unhappy that the bill actually increases the deficit. People keep saying $2.4 trillion. That's a little misleading. It increases the deficit by $2.4 trillion over 10 years. It increases the deficit by the debt by $250 billion, $240 billion a year for 10 years. So it's not $2.4 trillion this year or next year. Bad enough for Donald Trump campaign saying he was going to balance the budget. So
here's the thing, though. Isn't in that regard, we'll talk about the implications on the big, beautiful bill, on one big, beautiful bill in a moment. But in that regard, isn't Musk speaking? It's not just Musk who said on those two things that the tariffs are insane and that the big, beautiful bill is irresponsible in the way it adds to the deficit. Fred Smith was as a panel at the Peabody yesterday, and he was talking. And you know what? I'm sure Fred Smith believes the exact same things. In fact, most credible CEOs and business people believe both of those things. These tariffs are complete insanity, and the big, beautiful bill is irresponsible because it adds to our ballooning deficit. Like, he is, in fact.
So that's why Musk's opposition, when it was quiet, was kind of symbolic. Now that there's this huge fracture that happened over the last 3 days, And ask me about NASA. It kind of started with NASA. You said last night on Gabe's show, I thought you had a good theory.
Republicans in the House and Senate will rally to Donald Trump.
This is still my theory, despite what you're about to say. Yes, go ahead. Yes.
In the Capitol, those people are not going to rally to Musk, probably. But a member of Congress on CNN this morning said this makes it harder for about a dozen House members who've already passed the bill to vote to pass the bill. So Musk is creating a space where voters can protest that the bill doesn't do what Trump promised, what Musk promised. It doesn't eliminate enough agencies. That bill comes back from the Senate to the House. They have to vote on it again. One vote margin. So that Musk could unravel that, regardless of the big politics. And Musk is perfectly capable. You said he's not gonna spend money on Democrats. A reminder, Musk was once a Democrat, by the way.
Here's the other thing. Neither of these people are particularly principled. Go ahead, yes.
But he can primary people. And that's what safe people in quote-unquote safe Republican seats who think they're going to be reelected, what they don't want is Republican opposition in their primaries. And Elon Musk is perfectly capable of spending $10 million in 10 congressional races to punish people, right? That's what they're worried about. So he complicates the politics of that. I think that's much more likely that Donald Trump's going to do what he wants on tariffs. The CEOs of the biggest companies in the world, Walmart, Apple, Amazon, Google, have told him that the tariffs are bad, and he goes forward and does what he wants. The politics of this budget bill are much more complicated. And in fact, there's a certain hypocrisy, right? You campaign on balancing the budget, and you can't even keep the deficit where it is. Now, one more point. People keep saying Musk's new slogan is, let's just return to the budget, to the spending pre-pandemic. The nation was great in 2019. Let's just return to pre-pandemic spending levels. That can't be such a disaster. Well, here's the problem. That would be great, but then let's return to pre-pandemic tax levels. And rich people have had a big tax cut since then, and that would be...
Since the pandemic? I thought that was early on in Trump's administration.
It wasn't early on. It's when it took effect, right? And so if you return both, that's fine, but you're not going to fix the deficit just by returning spending.
Okay, here's the question. Let's just think about, by the way, on the Musk front, and I saw someone tweeted this and you sent me the tweet, is that Musk should be, this theory was, getting into a public battle with the president of the United States. Yesterday, Tesla went down 15%. He has a fiduciary duty to the stockholders at Tesla to do his best by that company. This is not doing best by that company. And so he should be fired as CEO of Tesla because he is hurting his company. And by the way, what is going to happen to, we have XAI here in Memphis. Starlink is another company that has contracts with the government. And of course, SpaceX, hell, it's how we get people back and forth to astronauts back and forth to space now. What is going to, because we've seen Donald Trump has gone after Harvard in this wildly personal, vindictive way for I don't exactly know what reason. But Harvard never called him a pedophile. Elon Musk has now called suggested that Trump is in the Epstein files. And that's
he called for Trump's impeachment.
So what can Trump and what
actually,
will Trump do?
Trump has been very restrained so far. Trump called Jay Powell, the very staid, stiff, proper chairman of the Federal Reserve Bank, a major loser. He called his own aide who helped him get elected, Steve Bannon, Sloppy Steve. He called Jeff Bezos Jeff Bozo. He called John Bolton, his national security advisor, quote unquote, one of the dumbest people in Washington. He has not actually unleashed his insult machine on Elon Musk.
He said he was crazy. He said he went crazy and that his people were buying his cars. What happened is that we took out these incentives that forced people to buy cars that nobody wanted, and he went crazy. That's what he said.
Right. Right. He used the word crazy. But given Trump's normal reaction, he's actually reacting with restraint. Jay Powell was appointed to the Federal Reserve by Donald Trump. He called him a major loser over interest rates. So Musk is literally trying to take down the signature piece of legislation, the overall policy effort of Donald Trump. So in fact, historically, Donald Trump's actually been kind of restrained. They sort of each have a grenade against the other one, landmines. Donald Trump could cancel SpaceX contracts, Starlink contracts. Donald Trump's FAA has to approve every single space launch, every single time. There's an environmental impact statement on every single space launch. The EPA could simply say to Elon Musk, I'm sorry, we're backed up because of the DOGE cuts. It's going to take us 3 months to review the impact of your next launch. Try scheduling it in early 2026, and there'd be nothing that Elon Musk could do. That, in fact, is what he has done to Harvard, right? And the flip side is we don't have any rockets to launch astronauts into space except the rockets built and launched and managed by Elon Musk. The Department of Defense and the intelligence agencies rely on Starlink for internet service for military functions every hour of every day. And so if Donald Trump threatens Elon Musk, Elon Musk can literally, remember, he did this to Ukraine. In one part of Ukraine, for something like 12 hours, he turned off Starlink service in Crimea because he was angry about something. And it totally crippled Ukraine's war effort for 12 hours. So they kind of have a mutually assured destruction switch for each other. And
Trump could, as Bannon has suggested, Steve Bannon has suggested that an investigation should be launched with an eye towards possibly deporting Musk because of his drug use and because
Musk is a naturalized American citizen. He's not here on a visa. He's not here on a green card. He is now an American citizen. Whatever you think about any of them, we don't want to start denaturalizing people because we're angry at them so that we can deport them. Elon Musk is a citizen of the United States of America. He's not going to be deported. He could be investigated, but if Donald Trump launches an investigation into his drug use as a federal employee, which is illegal, then Elon Musk will say, he literally over tweets yesterday, he threatened to ground the Dragon capsule, which flies astronauts to and from the space station.
Could he, by the way, turn off Starlink and explain to me what is Starlink exactly? I've never quite understood. What is Starlink?
Starlink is an alternative communication system based on the word Starlink is the name of the satellites and the name of the system. Elon Musk has 4,000 satellites in orbit. SpaceX has 4,000 satellites in orbit, and those satellites, hang on one second, those satellites provide real-time internet around the world. Actually, I'm wrong. As of June 1st, there are 8,800 Starlink satellites. In orbit around the Earth, most of the satellites belong to Elon Musk. Now, Starlink
really? We don't have, like, just as America, we don't have 8,000 satellites. It's just Trump has his own satellite fleet.
Not even close. And the U.S. government has there are 11,700 satellites in orbit that are active. There's 14,000 if you include the ones that are no longer operating. So Elon Musk controls 80% of the satellites in orbit. But those satellites perform. You don't need 8,000 satellites to do the weather, right? You need 10 satellites in the right place of the right kind. The U.S. government has its own secret satellite communication systems for high-value, high-security communications. Starlink provides real-time internet, and I think in some instances, some real-time voice communication. So aircraft carriers or military ships or military airplanes in the middle of the Pacific Ocean, nowhere near land or landlines or land communications, some of their military communications now rely on Starlink. Ukraine uses Starlink for targeting. So we're talking about down to the, you know, half a foot, down to 5 inches, 6 inches. So, yeah, can he turn it off? Well, he'd be violating the contract. Can Comcast or Verizon flick a switch and turn your internet off? They can. You're paying the bill. They should keep it on. While you're arguing about whether he can do it or not,
we have to wrap up here momentarily.
The globe go dark.
What's going to happen now? Here's my prediction, and this is why I said I think this is so messy now that Republicans who might have been inclined to say I want to tinker with this bill in this way, I want to whatever. It's such a public joke and disaster now that I actually think that my experience is that when it comes to disputes, Trump always wins. He didn't win the election. Biden won that election. But except for that, like, he always somehow emerges and he always wins. I think the big, beautiful bill will pass. And I think in the end, he is president of the United States. And those Republicans are going to be like, we can't. We have hitched, for good or bad, we have hitched ourselves to this dude. And we can't let this become a complete disaster. We hate the bill.
No,
we acknowledge that it's going to add trillions to the whatever, but we're going to vote for it anyway.
Well, I think, first of all, I don't think Musk and Trump are going to let this get out of control. I don't agree with their positions, but I think they both have some sense of public spiritedness. I think you're right. If you look at who won in this relationship, Musk or Trump, Trump clearly won. He's the president. He holds much of the power, but he can't simply punish Elon Musk the way he's punishing Harvard. That won't work. And that's why.
Why not? And that won't work because Musk has too many cards.
Musk can retaliate. Right. Musk can retaliate just with SpaceX technology in a way that will really, really hurt the federal government. And so I think that's why you see a certain amount of restraint. I think, oddly, Donald Trump can come out looking a little statesmanlike by saying, you know what? Go watch the video of him screaming and jumping up and down on stage. That's Elon Musk for you. I'm going to focus on the big
statesmanlike, and yet he did release today that they're selling the Tesla.
I think the one thing you can count on is that the red Tesla will get sold. But it's just a reminder. Look at the damage before the feud at 9 a.m. yesterday. Look at the damage that Elon Musk had done to his companies, his public standing, the value of his own assets, and the sales of Tesla.
Well, as a divorced couple,
Donald Trump's.
Yeah. He's the spouse who had to leave the house. I think Musk is the loser here. By the way, why is the market up today? Jobs report?
I think the jobs report.
Wasn't there a jobs report?
Good, ladies and gentlemen.
Wasn't there a good jobs report? Yeah. Wasn't there a good jobs report?
And what the jobs report showed is that despite a lot of chaos in the economy, Americans and companies are holding steady, not wild enthusiasm, not dramatic nervousness, steady as she goes. And you know what? You guys, I think most Americans don't know about the feud.
What? You don't believe that to be true. You could not have heard about it.
You think most have not heard about it? Listen, ladies and gentlemen, tomorrow, 7 p.m., 6 p.m. Memphis time, CNN.
Oh, yeah.
Watch the George Clooney play. Good night and good luck. Right. You will not be sorry you did.
Thank you, Charles.
Even if you were Elon Musk, you couldn't get
the movie's better.
Thank you, Charles. Appreciate it. What's better? We missed it. You didn't hear that.
The movie.
The movie's better. Oh, is the movie good?
It's pretty good.
Movie's pretty good. What is coming up next on 92.9?
Jeff, here's what's coming up next on Jason and John. Anthony Sane going to join them today. Tim Murray will be with me today on Jeffrey Wright and Company. Blake Topmeyer joins us during hour number one. Cobb will be with Gabe at 5 o'clock.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Thanks, Charles, for coming on. And we will be back Monday. For now, our work is done.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9 to 5 for a 5 to 9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.